Canto Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Something More Substantial by Jan Roland, narrated by Mary Sarah. Chapter 1. Kent was, in many ways, as beautiful as its proponents claimed. It truly was the Garden of England, as the environs of Rosings Park could attest. The estate was a mixture of beautiful fields, awaiting the planting soon to begin, strands of trees dancing lively in the breeze, also on the verge of attaining their summer greenery. Interspersed with all this bounty lay hidden streams and ponds, lovely concealed glades carpeted with wild flowers, and even a small waterfall or two. Everyone loved what they knew best. This was a truism Elizabeth had always regarded as inviolable, and if she still preferred her home and its rolling hills, she did not think anyone could blame her for it. That Kent was fine was a fact that she could not and did not wish to dispute. But there was something about her father's estate that called to her, whispered its secrets like a beloved friend. Thinking back to her arrival a few weeks before, Elizabeth could not help but remember Mr. Collins's words concerning his home. That he had spoken to provoke her regret for refusing his suit was of no consequence. Elizabeth had been unmoved when he had crowed about his fine situation, yet she could readily agree. He had not overstated the appeal of his home. She had not learned to repine her refusal, even if her dear friend Charlotte would become Longbourn's mistress. It was a position that had carried far too much of a price for Elizabeth, a woman who wished to marry for love. Perhaps espousing this wish in the face of her family's possible poverty, should her father perish early, may have been foolish, but Elizabeth, who knew herself well, understood the suffering she would endure if she relaxed her principles. Mr. Collins, unfortunately, was a silly man, a man impressed by sudden and unexpected prosperity, one who had come in search of a wife the previous autumn. Elizabeth's mother, a woman long fearing for her future in the face of the entail on her father's estate, had pushed the match. It was fortunate for Elizabeth that her father had agreed with her rather than his wife, for Elizabeth did not know what she might have done if he had required her to marry his foolish heir. Happily, Elizabeth had not needed to discover the limits of her determination, and Mr. Collins diverted his attention to Charlotte, Elizabeth's closest friend, in a manner satisfactory to them all, except the aforementioned Mrs. Bennet. The problem, Elizabeth could acknowledge to herself, if no other, was the dearth of eligible gentlemen in the neighbourhood of her home, willing to pursue a young woman of little dowry or connections, regardless of how pretty she was. Her sister Jane had discovered that, much to her sorrow. They had not made the acquaintance of a true gentleman of consequence since Elizabeth could remember, and she did not count the rather callow young man who had written Jane poetry when she had been in London at the age of 15. Elizabeth sighed as she walked the paths of Rosings Park, gazing wistfully about at the beauty surrounding her. Now 20 years of age, Jane was 22. Elizabeth could feel the hand of inevitability as it reached out for her, its questing fingers brushing her shoulders, seeking purchase. Something must change soon, or they would face difficult choices. Elizabeth little wished to leave her home and enter service, but she also knew there were few options open to young ladies of her station if they did not marry or possess an independent fortune. It would still be half a decade or more before she would approach that dreaded state of being on the shelf. But it was approaching, nonetheless. Regardless of her thoughts that morning, it was not in Elizabeth's nature to bemoan circumstances or wish for something she could not have. Soon the woods of Rosings worked their magic on her, and she pushed her mordant thoughts to the back of her mind. But they stayed there, waiting for her next bout of introspection, as they had often of late, Eventually, she must confront the reality of her situation, but that day had not yet arrived. When Elizabeth returned, the family was just sitting down for breakfast. Mr. Collins voiced his usual comments, exclaiming his surprise at Elizabeth's propensity to walk so early, while Charlotte deflected her husband's verbosity, inviting her to sit and partake with them. Maria, Charlotte's sister, remained quiet, focusing on her meal. Elizabeth knew this would not last long, for she was a chatty, pleasant sort of girl. For the moment, she did not add to the noise, which was welcome. For a time, they sat in this attitude, concentrating on the eggs, toast, and other assorted breakfast foods they usually consumed. In all the time Elizabeth had been in Kent, that breakfast had been served often enough that she knew Mr. Collins favoured such foods. His ample midsection added its testament to Elizabeth's supposition. Regardless of the man's persistent love of his own voice, Elizabeth welcomed his glimpse into her friend's new life and appreciated Charlotte's invitation. She must return to her home in a few weeks, but she felt blessed that she had this precious time to store up memories for when they must separate. It was Mr. Collins's custom to go to Rosings every day to receive the dubious wisdom of the estate's occupant, Lady Catherine de Bourgh. The lady was exactly as Elizabeth might have expected when the man first mentioned her during his visit to Longbourn. She was a tall woman, using her height and imperious manners as a bludgeon. Nothing was beyond her ladyship's ability to meddle, no matter how insignificant. Elizabeth found the woman amusing, contented herself with enjoying the absurdities whenever she was in her company, and did not think of her when she was not. Or at least she did not think of the lady when Mr. Collins was not speaking of her. As Lady Catherine was his favourite topic of conversation, Elizabeth thought of the lady far too much for her taste. When Mr. Collins came hurrying back to the parsonage that day, however, he brought some interesting information with him. As Elizabeth might have expected, the parson's news did not concern her ladyship so much, for in Elizabeth's mind, she was truly not an interesting woman. Rather, he brought word of a pair of guests who would soon appear at her ladyship's estate.
"I have learned the most wondrous news, my dear Charlotte," said he,
when he entered the room, still out of breath from having hurried back from the estate. Charlotte, who was aware of her husband's foibles, looked on him, betraying none of the exasperation Elizabeth was certain she must feel. Did Lady Catherine have some particularly useful advice to impart? While on other occasions, Charlotte's guess might have been a good one. It seemed there was more to Mr. Collins's excitement than his usual absurdity.
"The lady has given us so much excellent advice. You are correct to assume she has done so again,"
exulted Mr. Collins.
"Indeed, rarely a day goes by when she is not full of some marvellous bit of wisdom that will improve our lives. She was the same today, but I shall tell you about it later, for while we must put her words into action with alacrity, today was special. For her ladyship has told me that she expects visitors to her magnificent abode."
"Does she?" asked Charlotte, her even tone not approaching the joyous rapture her husband deemed necessary on the occasion. "That is interesting, Mr. Collins, for I do not believe she has had guests stay at Rosings since I arrived."
"No, that is true," said Mr. Collins with a frown. "While she is the most generous lady of my acquaintance, she has not hosted guests since I came to Hunsford. But this is a long-standing engagement, from what I understand. According to her ladyship, her nephews visit every Easter to assist with the estate. I will own I have no notion of what assistance they can be, for Lady Catherine is the most capable estate manager I have ever seen. But I suppose I must commend her nephews for their diligence. Not that anyone related to her could do anything else."
It would have done Elizabeth's predilection toward humour well to have asked Mr. Collins how many estate owners he had seen in action. Knowing he would not only not comprehend the question or her mirth, and that Charlotte would most certainly understand both, she refrained. And did she inform you anything else about these nephews? Asked Charlotte, her interest aroused.
Enough to inform me they are prominent men themselves. The elder of her nephews is Colonel Fitzwilliam, the younger son of the Earl of Matlock, while the other is Mr. Darcy, the son of her ladyship's dear sister, and the proprietor of a grand estate in Derbyshire.
Mr. Collins continued to expound upon his information, leaving Elizabeth to exchange a sly glance with Charlotte. Mr. Collins might expect these nephews to be the very image of deity, but Elizabeth was not so certain they would give the humble residents at the parsonage any notice. At the very least, she expected Mr. Collins's self-congratulatory hope of greeting them like long-sundered friends would end in disappointment.
"Do you know,"
said Mr. Collins, his voice having lost none of its enthusiasm, while Elizabeth was distracted,
"we shall meet the next master of Rosings Park. Lady Cuthbert herself has informed me that Mr. Darcy is engaged to her daughter, Miss Anne de Bourgh."
"Is that so?" asked Charlotte. "That is curious, for I've heard nothing of an engagement, and Miss de Bourgh has not acted like an engaged woman."
Well, it is, Lady Catherine has said,
stammered Mr. Collins. "Yes," prompted Charlotte.
"I cannot speak to the specifics," said Mr. Collins at length, "but Lady Catherine has informed me of it, so it must be true."
Privately, Elizabeth wondered if this business was nothing more than a wish on Lady Catherine's part. That was something she would not say to Mr. Collins, and as it did not concern her in the slightest, there was little reason to question it. Anne de Bourgh was a sickly young woman, one who could rarely be prevailed upon to string three words together. If this Mr. Darcy was engaged to her, Elizabeth could only wish him luck, for she could not imagine Mr. de Bourgh would be a stimulating companion. Later, when Mr. Collins finally exhausted his torrent of words and retreated to his study to compose a sermon, Elizabeth had occasion to speak of the matter with Charlotte. Long having been friends, Elizabeth was aware of what her friend would say before she opened her mouth, her friend possessing a similar insight into Elizabeth's character. Thus their banter flowed freely as they speculated how the gentlemen might present themselves to those who lived in circumstances they could not compare with their positions in life. "They may prove pleasant," said Elizabeth, in response to a statement of Charlotte's about their characters. "But there is one factor against the theory that we cannot ignore." "Oh?" asked Charlotte, her eyes sparkling with mirth. "And what would that be?" "They are Lady Catherine's nephews," replied Elizabeth, provoking her friend's laughter. "Can you dispute it?" "Not until I have made their acquaintance," replied Charlotte. "I possess a little more hope that they will be amiable, but I cannot fault your reasoning."
"Do not concern yourself, Charlotte," said Elizabeth,
"for I am capable of discretion, and will not assert their arrogance sight unseen. But you will forgive me if I have little hope that they are amiable. If they are at all like Lady Catherine, their company cannot be agreeable." "Perhaps you are approaching this incorrectly, Lizzie. It seems to me this is an opportunity that does not appear every day."
"Charlotte," warned Elizabeth, but her friend would not be deterred.
"Listen to me, Lizzie," said Charlotte, shaking with mirth. "One of these gentlemen may answer all your mother's hopes and dreams. If you can only make one of them fall in love with you, your position as your mother's favourite daughter would be restored."
"In saying as much, you suppose I have ever been her favourite," said Elizabeth with a gay laugh. "As that position belongs to Lydia, and I've no interest in it, I believe I shall be content with what I have."
"Ah, Lizzie," said Charlotte, with a shake of her head,
"it is wonderful to be in your company again, for I never laugh so much as when I'm with you."
"Aye, it is good to be reunited," replied Elizabeth.
"As for your assertion, I cannot imagine these men will even show a hint of interest in the likes of Miss Elizabeth Bennet, of the small estate of Longbourn in Hertfordshire. I am 20, and no man has yet given me a hint of interest.
You are too fine a woman to remain unmarried forever. Charlotte's voice was brimming with affection. There is a man for you, Lizzie. You need only find him.
To please you, Charlotte, replied Elizabeth, I shall not relinquish my hope.
Then you cannot fail.
With a grin, Elizabeth thanked her friend and excused herself to return to her room. Charlotte might have visions of gentlemen falling at her feet to worship her, but they were in large part because Charlotte wished for Elizabeth's future security. And Elizabeth was the romantic. Chuckling at the apparent reversal of roles, Elizabeth lay down on her bed with a book in hand. It was not long before she fell asleep, dreaming of handsome gentlemen who challenged dragons all for her. It was a pleasant way to pass an afternoon.
Was he asleep?
Darcy felt like pinching himself to make certain, for his aunt's droning voice produced enough lethargy in him to fell a stallion. Thus it always was, unless Lady Catherine was speaking of his future marriage to Anne. Then her voice would rise to a screech, containing enough melodrama for Covent Garden.
Well, perhaps he should not think so, for Lady Catherine did not speak in a monotone,
but she blathered on for so long, in love with the sound of her own voice, disinclined to allow anyone to share their opinions, that it was impossible to retain one's focus on her conversation. Such as it was, the matter of his supposed engagement with Anne had been, of course, the first words out of her mouth, and for perhaps the first half hour she had devoted herself to the subject. But since then she had branched out to other matters, most of which little interested her nephews, leading to Darcy's state of utter tedium. At length, when they had endured her longer than anyone should endure anything, Darcy and his cousin extricated themselves. There were a few places in the house they could be certain of remaining free from her company. She was not above searching them out if she felt she had not bored them enough. The billiards room was Fitzwilliam's choice, and as one was the same as another to Darcy, he followed in his cousin's wake with an absence of thought.
"Well, Darcy?" asked Fitzwilliam with a smirk, not long after breaking.
Even the welcome clack of the balls was not enough to drag Darcy from his stupor.
"I'm surprised you have yet said nothing of our aunt." "Is there anything to say?" asked Darcy, as he watched his cousin sink a tricky shot. "By my recollection, Lady Catherine is the same as she was last year, and the year before, and..." "I think I understand, Darcy," replied Fitzwilliam with a chuckle, as he lined up his next shot. "However, I would say you are wrong, for I believe she is more desperate this year than she was last."
Darcy grunted.
"Perhaps you are correct, but I will note that I was lost in the wilderness of my futile desire to be anywhere else long before I saw any change in her."
Fitzwilliam's lusty guffaw at Darcy's jest accompanied the sound of the cue ball striking another, and of that ball rolling into a pocket at the other end of the table. As Fitzwilliam moved around the table to take his next shot, he regarded Darcy.
"What about this news of visitors to the parsonage?" "I believe I was too far gone, cousin. Old Mayweather has visitors."
With a snort, Fitzwilliam jabbed his stick forward, impacting the ball and sending it careening into another. But this time the ball rattled around the pocket and did not fall. With a grimace of annoyance, Fitzwilliam ceded his place at the table to Darcy, who rose to take his shot.
"It seems you were truly not attending," replied Fitzwilliam. "And you have not read our aunt's letters recently. Mayweather passed away from apoplexy not long after we left Rosings last year."
The matter recalled to Darcy's memory, he nodded and took a shot, sinking the shot in the middle pocket.
"Now that you mention it, I do remember. Did your father not say the new parson was not precisely an impressive specimen?" "Would you have expected he would be?" asked Fitzwilliam, laughter in his tone. "Competence is not a quality Lady Catherine prizes in her underlings. Absolute devotion, an inability to think for oneself, and a healthy fear of her retribution for even thinking of disobeying her or all she requires. This one, according to my father, is far more ridiculous than any he has ever met. And the visitors?
Prompted Darcy as he took his next shot.
Well, they are not all visitors, replied Fitzwilliam.
He watched as Darcy moved around the table, attempting to decide between two shots of equal difficulty.
The man is recently married, it seems, and the lady's sister and her close friend are currently visiting the parsonage.
Darcy grimaced as he set himself and brought the cue forward, impacting the cue ball sharply, where it hit the other ball, sped toward the pocket, and hit its back before falling inside. Nodding with satisfaction, he moved around the table to his next shot.
Did she say anything more about them? You know, Lady Catherine, replied Fitzwilliam. It is difficult to pick the treasure from the dross in her words. She did, however, suggest that this friend of the parson's wife is a pretty genteel sort of girl, though she mentioned something of an unfortunate tendency to speak her mind with excessive confidence.
A snort escaped Darcy's lips. He took his next shot and then shifted sideways for the final challenge that would win the game.
In Lady Catherine's mind, if a young woman even gives the appearance of disagreeing, she must be the most impertinent girl in England. I will not say you are incorrect, said Fitzwilliam, eyeing the table as Darcy sunk his shot.
Then he stood and racked the balls again, gesturing to Darcy as the winner of the previous game to break.
I took enough encouragement in Lady Catherine's comments to hope there will be some relief on this visit. While the sister is yet young, the parson foolish, and the wife married, I hope the young lady will match Lady Catherine's description of her. We cannot always be at the parsonage. No, but any reprieve will be more than welcome. One can only extend the tour of the park so much before it too becomes monotonous. A young lady who can carry on a conversation and not bore me to tears, would be a very boon from on high.
Darcy grunted.
Except that when she learns of our positions, she'll become a bloodhound with our scent in her nose.
Fitzwilliam shook his head.
Come, Darcy, let us not convict her of so heinous a crime as fortune hunting before we have even made her acquaintance. I have seen it so many times that I can predict the sequence of events in advance.
Grumbled Darcy.
Then let us hope this time will be a surprise,
replied Fitzwilliam. Darcy nodded and turned his attention back to the table. They played for some time in silence, Fitzwilliam winning the next two games, while Darcy won the fourth. At length, even the billiards room became a place of boredom, unable to hold their attention, and they left for the study. Another room Lady Catherine did not use. She claimed her own office more than sufficed for her needs, and Darcy could only be grateful for her disinterest in the room, for it gave them another retreat. While they were ensconced therein, Fitzwilliam poured them each a finger's width of the brandy stock there, and they sat in the matching chairs before the hearth.
So, shall we make our way to the parsonage at once, and see for ourselves what manner of beauties inhabit it?
For a long moment, Darcy regarded his cousin.
You are eager to go, it seems. I cannot understand why you would not be. Hope drives me forward, Darcy. For otherwise, our stay here will be as interminable as it has been every other year. Yes, I suppose you must be correct. It is better than languishing in this house for the next 2 weeks.
Darcy paused, toying with his glass.
But it may not be wise to brave Lady Catherine's displeasure so quickly.
Fitzwilliam grimaced, for he understood Darcy's reference at once.
Ah, yes. I had almost forgotten Lady Catherine's penchant for insisting on preserving the differences in rank. You had forgotten nothing.
Darcy grinned at his cousin.
You were only desperate to make the acquaintance of a pretty young woman, so you could charm her. I suppose I was, replied Fitzwilliam. How many days do you suppose would suffice before we may safely sally forth to the parsonage to meet this wondrous creature?
Stifling a snort, Darcy shook his head.
Two or three days should be sufficient to inform Lady Catherine that our interest is not great, that we visit only as a courtesy, thereby sparing ourselves a lecture,
agreed his cousin.
More importantly, replied Darcy, she will suspect nothing untoward. You know how she gets, if she thinks we are paying attention to anyone she deems unworthy. She is just as protective of my virtue as she is yours, said Fitzwilliam. I hope Miss Baker has recovered from the set-down Aunt Catherine gave her last year. I told you that you should not visit so much, replied Darcy,
considering his aunt's dressing down of her neighbour's sister.
For myself, it is no trouble to avoid Staunton Hall, as I do not get on with Baker at all. That much is certain, replied Fitzwilliam with a laugh. Then I shall wait for our visit with bated breath, for I know the days will be tedious until we can find relief.
With those words, Fitzwilliam drained his glass and excused himself to return to his room. Darcy was of a mind to follow him, for a nap would be welcome at that moment. Feeling lethargic, however, he could not summon the will to rise and leave the room. Such was the effect of his position at Rosings Park, at the beginning of another frustrating visit. If only the days would pass swiftly, so he could leave. But he knew they would plod along far too slowly for his taste.
But endure them he must. There was no other choice.
Chapter 2. Contrary to Mr. Collins's expectations, Lady Catherine's nephews did not appear at the parsonage, eager to be introduced to its inhabitants. For 2 days after, they saw nothing of the gentleman. Mr. Collins, so often was he at Rosings Park, brought intelligence of Lady Catherine's nephews the very morning after their arrival. Given his propensity to praise Lady Catherine to the skies, his information was suspect. But Elizabeth would not say that to him, lest she provoke an incident.
"What gentlemanly men they are!"
exclaimed the parson that day, when he returned to the parsonage.
"They are both so proper, and everything obliging. I dare say the resemblance to Lady Catherine, in both form and character, is so marked that no one could mistake them for anything other than her closest relations."
Elizabeth hazarded a glance at her dearest friend, but she noted Charlotte was not looking in her direction. The cynical part of her assumed it was because she did not wish to risk laughing in response to Elizabeth's concealed humour, but she could not say as much to her friend. The parson did not cease his praise for a full 30 minutes after returning, such that Elizabeth was curious in spite of herself. He did not relay any information that might be of interest to a young lady. He did not comment on their height, handsome countenances, or their broad shoulders, but enough came through that Elizabeth wondered if there was not at least a grain of truth in his claims. At the very least, perhaps their coming would inject a hint of liveliness in their party, for in recent days some of their doings had become monotonous. Regardless of Mr. Collins's paroxysms on the subject, the ladies were not to know the gentleman for another 2 days after he made their acquaintance. As they could not go to Rosings without an invitation, they could only wait for the gentleman to appear. Maria, it seemed, waited with barely concealed impatience, for her young and romantic disposition caught her up in dreams of handsome young men sweeping her off her feet. Elizabeth was more pragmatic than her young friend, contenting herself to wait until they deigned to show themselves. In the meantime, she attended to her concerns, which consisted of helping her friend in the parsonage, indulging in her favourite pastimes, and walking the grounds of Rosings. Her walks consumed the early hours of most mornings, and even some afternoons, when Charlotte felt the desire to walk out herself. In her explorations, she came across several previously unknown locations, and watched the verdure of the coming summer's foliage burst forth from its winter slumber. While she was thus engaged, she came closer to one of Lady Catherine's nephews than her two companions. It was a lovely spring morning, the 3rd day after the gentleman had arrived. That morning, Elizabeth had decided to take a small path branching away from the wide track she usually favoured. And in doing so, She found a delightful break in the trees that allowed a field of bluebells to grow. Elizabeth sat herself down by the side of the
Sample complete. Ready to continue?